The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Good morning. How is everybody?
This is why I work nights. 109 degrees.
Eh, that's a good point, yeah.
You know? That's... I mean, we were talking earlier about the people who work, outside labor-intensive jobs outside. Just walking to your car from an office, 109 degrees.
I didn't go out yesterday.
Yeah.
I was going to get up early.
No, I didn't either.
I was going to get up early and ride the bike and did. I do a lot of resistance training and said I'm going to do that for the next couple of days because I may try to ride the bike early this morning. You know, get out early and do it, but it's too dang hot. That's the one good thing about nights, but still, what is it out there now? Is it still 87, 88?
It's in the mid-80s somewhere.
I was reading that down in Central Texas, they're warning people, scorpions want to come inside.
Yeah, right, yes. And
there's a problem.
West Texas as well. Growing up, in fact, my grandmother's house is, a couple of hours west of here. In a small town. And if you were going to go in there and take a bath, you had to clear for scorpions first. I mean, that was just a thing in West Texas. Yeah. Yeah.
I know there's, you know, small scorpions around me. I've never seen one.
Never seen a scorpion?
Never seen a scorpion.
Yeah.
Never seen one.
One of the first radio stations I was working at, out in the middle of nowhere, I was reading copy, about to do a spot.
A commercial.
Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, scorpion drops on the page.
Oh!
Yeah.
Now you have me looking. I was starting
well,
to
you know,
I
we
look
had
up
a,
into the air.
We had the snake in here, in this building.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah, when we first moved
few
in.
A few years ago, yeah. I don't know what kind of snake it was. But... No, thanks.
We got it out there.
Well, they're building so much around here, you know, you stir up the... This used to be, years ago, behind us, actually just a few months ago. It was nothing but fields. And now it's all houses and apartment complexes that are going up fast.
Yeah, across the street, over here. This used to be deserted.
Right.
A deserted
now you're stirring
industrial
up all the
apartment.
Critters, and it's only a matter of time.
Oh, stay away.
Yeah.
All right. We didn't get a chance, too much this week to talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We did
right.
A little bit. I mean, we did mention her occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, a couple of things. First off, I'm going to play an audio cut in a few moments here coming up from the firing line interview she did on PBS.
Okay.
Which is actually good because, Margaret Hoover actually had a follow-up question. As we've said, have follow-up questions. Because liberals can't answer them, and we have a perfect example coming up. But there was another article that I read on her, and it came from Quartz.com.
All right.
And it came from one of their economic writers, Alison Schrager, who said, I would not wish to be thrust into the national spotlight at age 28 as the future of a major political party, no less on my worst enemy. Congressional candidate Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, with fiery talk of democratic socialism and ending Wild West hyper-capitalism, is attracting a level of scrutiny that all of our elected officials should get. Few rarely do. And I agree with that statement. I wish that everybody, because, you know, even the left is coming out now. You got members of Congress coming out. We don't want her to be the head of, now, I don't know whether they're jealous because she's 28 years old. And they realize, wait a minute, I've been putting in my dues, and She comes out and she's now the new superstar. You had Joe Lieberman say, no, 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 don't vote for her. Joe Crowley is still on the ballot on a minor ballot. If he campaigns or if he stays on it, vote for him instead. But she has been, you know, the things that she said in that interview have been torn apart and should be torn apart. But the fact is, we should be doing it to every single politician. And Allison writes here, during a recent interview on PBS's Firing Line, Ocasio-Cortez got two things wrong about the economy. First, she got the definition of unemployment wrong, the unemployment rate. She said that the rate is low. She said the rate is low, currently hovering around 4%, because many people are working multiple jobs. And as we all know, we immediately, anybody who knows anything about the unemployment rate knew that was false. Actually, the number of jobs people work does not impact the unemployment rate. If the ratio of people who have no job and are seeking to work, it is the ratio of people who have no job and are seeking work to the number of people in the labor force, people with jobs and people looking for jobs. Second, the share of people working multiple jobs nationally, 5%, not an epidemic. So both are wrong, and we knew it's wrong. But look, we said the same thing. She's being criticized immediately on, even when people from the left, like Obama, never was.
Right. Well, the one thing is that they can't afford to have that so-called rising star taken down so easily in a debate. Or even an interview, really. You know, we haven't even hit the debates yet. But if she were to be the rising star of the party, then, of course, there would be more debates beyond, let's just say, you know, she was in New York 14 for 4 or 5 years and then ran for higher office.
Well, here's a theory. That when Obama came in, if you said the word socialism, it was considered the N-word. Mm-hmm. You could be a socialist, you just couldn't promote it actively. That it is her promotion as a Democrat socialist and promoting sanctuary cities, open borders, socialism as a young person that the Democrat Party realizes, or a significant portion of the Democrat Party says, we can't. That's what Lieberman was saying. Look, she can win her election. She can win her district. You cannot win on a national circuit, and they are anointing her as the new Obama.
Yeah. Right. Camilla, the rising star, right.
Camilla Harris?
Mm-hmm.
Cory Booker?
No.
They're
establishment.
They're so first week of July of 2018.
Yeah. You're talking pre-4th of July.
Pre-4th of July, right. They're pre-4th of July. They're get out of here.
Dated.
Old. Get out of here.
What's funny is now Cortez's, we're getting into end of July, and she's going to be so mid-July.
Yeah, but she's absolutely clueless.
No, she is.
She is completely and totally unprepared. I want to give you an example here. This is her on Firing Line, and this is when she was asked a question on Israel. And it's interesting, just when you ask a follow-up question, which we said is the biggest thing, that's what's wrong. You want to talk about the media and what's wrong with the media, besides the bias. It's those that claim that they're journalists who don't ask the follow-up question. They accept the BS question. They accept, as my dad would say, the poop for the peasants, and don't question them on it. She simply said, well, explain it. And she couldn't. She got burned. Here we go. Here's part of this. Here
you
on Israel.
You have not really needed so far to take many foreign policy positions,
mm-hmm,
because you were unseating a Democratic incumbent. But now you are very likely going to be going to Washington, mm-hmm, and you'll have to sort of build out some of those foreign policy positions. You, in the campaign, made one tweet or made one statement, mm-hmm, that referred to a killing by Israeli soldiers of civilians in Gaza, mm-hmm, and called it a massacre, which, mm-hmm, became a little bit controversial. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen anywhere. What is your position on Israel? Well, I believe absolutely in Israel's right to exist. I am a proponent of a two-state solution. And for me, this is not a referendum, I think, on the state of Israel. For me, the lens through which I saw this incident as an activist, as an organizer, if 60 people were killed in Ferguson, Missouri, if 60 people were killed in the South Bronx, unarmed, 60 people were killed in Puerto Rico, I just look at that incident more through just as an incident. And to me, it would just be...
Okay, completely
unacceptable if that happened on our shores. But I am...
Of course, the dynamic there in terms of geopolitics and the war in the Middle East is very different than people expressing their First Amendment right to protest.
Well, yes. But I also think that what people are starting to see, at least in the occupation of Palestine, is just an increasing crisis of humanitarian condition. And that, to me, is just where I tend to come from on this issue.
You use the term the occupation of Palestine.
Having some problems here.
What did you mean by that?
Oh, I think what I meant is like the settlements that are increasing in some of these areas and places where Palestinians are experiencing difficulty in access to their housing and homes.
Do you think you can expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd also just, I am not the expert on geopolitics on this issue. You know, for me, I'm a firm believer in finding a two-state solution.
Could answer the question.
Mm-hmm. Well, because
I want to make it clear. She wasn't pausing there. I don't want to make it so people think that she was pausing there. She couldn't answer the question, but some of those pauses there was because we had just had problems with the feed here.
Right. And if you're going to promote something as a concern, well, why did it concern you? She doesn't even know why she's concerned.
My point is with the journalist, just all you have to do is ask the little follow-ups, what do you mean by this? And you can stump almost every liberal politician out there.
Mm-hmm.
But she is totally and completely unprepared. She's clueless on the economy. She's clueless on the statistics of the economy. She is absolutely clueless when it comes to foreign affairs.
Mm-hmm.
What does she have? She's young and perky.
Mm-hmm.
And proudly proclaims, I'm a Democrat socialist.
Yeah. And really can't explain what that is.
Right. No, she can't. So.
Yeah. And this is what, you know, it's funny because Lieberman comes out, you need to find another candidate. No. They don't.
But this is what brings out Lieberman from hibernation.
Exactly.
That's what brought him out.
This is what woke Lieberman up.
Well, but I wonder if Lieberman was to the point where, look, you know, we're going to have the left wing, but, you know, they're still not going to be able to dominate. It's still, you know, it's still Pelosi and Schumer, so we're still not going to be socialist. And finally he looks at it and he sees her come and win the primary. He sees how the media just loves her and anoints her as she's now called the Democrat superstar.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you have people like Lieberman and, you know, who was more of a Lieberman, not that he doesn't have liberal tendencies, but you could view him today as a moderate.
Oh, yeah.
Democrat. A moderate Democrat.
The party or the Democrats probably view him as far right. I mean, the centrist right now is Nancy Pelosi. So there's your gauge.
And so he looks at it and others are looking at it because she's been criticized by more than just Lieberman, that they're like, my God, we can't go this way. This person cannot be the intellectual base of the Democrat Party because we will not win national elections with her mindset. And is that the fear? Is a fear finally starting to leak out that, not only do we have to cater to the far left, but the far left and the socialists now have an in to completely take over the party. And then you see the Democrats and how they voted, you know, for Feinstein. and where that's going. And I look at it and I just wonder if you have the Pelosis, if you have the Schumers, if you have the long-term Democrats. I'll even throw in somebody like a Mark Warner. Just as an example, who look and say, my God, we can't go this far left. We just can't do it. We won't be able to win national elections. And all of a sudden, that fear is striking in. Obama was able to BS people that he was a moderate and win to. Yeah. Because when you called him a socialist, that was the new N-word. Calling her a socialist is now a badge of honor, a victory, victory, and a rallying cry.
Oh, yeah.
How times have changed. 866-90-RED-EYE.
As the temperature rises, so does the importance of tire maintenance and inspections. Tire replacements are the number one roadside repair request during the summer. And underinflation is the number one cause of hot weather tire failures. As a tire rolls down an already hot surface, its sidewall flexes, causing a buildup of excessive heat and increasing your risk of an accident or breakdown. The key to staying on the road this summer is proper tire inflation. You can help avoid tire breakdowns by conducting pre-trip inspections to ensure that your tires are properly inflated. Investing in a quality tire gauge will save you money in the long run and will allow you to check your inflation levels before each trip.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney. I'm Gary McNamara. We go to Jeff in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Jeff, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Fantastic.
Yes. I think that Ms. Cortez is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I think that Wacky Bernie ought to take her and run for president as her running mate. And I think the Democrats need more people like Ms. Cortez, because they're really going to be a blue wave that they do. I'm being very facetious.
Well, when you look at some of the polling numbers that we brought the other day, where, what was it, 73% of Democrats want a new face to run. They don't want Bernie. They don't want Hillary Clinton. You know, you look at some of the other candidates, you know, Joe Biden. They don't want Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. Who knows? They may look at Kamala Harris and Cory Booker as you know, being too establishment.
Cortez is perfect.
She gets Jeff's endorsement.
We endorse Cortez for president for 2020 here on Red Eye Radio from the Democrat side.
Right. Now, keep in mind, Jeff, if she runs on a Bernie ticket, he can't endorse her because he doesn't endorse anyone, even his own children. So he won't endorse his own VP on the ticket, but they'll still run together.
Yeah, but would he want her as VP? I mean, she would overshadow him.
Oh, I think so.
And I'm going from the point of view that 73% of Democrats don't really, they don't want Bernie or Hillary to run.
No, they don't. Well, and the question is, by the time she, let's just say she at some point ran for president, she's going to be old news. I mean, she's going to be old news by December. So, Cortez.
Wow. I mean, and she won't even be sworn in yet.
I mean, that's how quickly things move on the left. That's how they change so rapidly. They really do. This is why we make the joke. Well, they were so pre-4th of July, because that's how fast things are moving.
But she's the only one being referred to by Democrats as the new superstar. I've seen
because
superstar.
They don't have anybody else
in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Till. undeniably irrefutable. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. A couple of other stories out there. Former President Barack Obama was actually my greatest disappointment. Liberal mega donor George Soros says in an interview published by the New York Times on Tuesday. So the world's leading, excuse me, the world's richest liberal calls Obama my greatest disappointment. My greatest disappointment is if he owned him.
He talks like he's some kind of puppet master. Certainly George Soros isn't a puppet master, right?
As an early supporter of Mr. Obama's 2018 election campaign, Mr. Soros told the Times he felt let down on a professional level by the lack of attention he received from the former president during his 8 years on office. Mr. Obama closed the door on me after he was elected, Mr. Soros said in an interview. He made one phone call thanking me for my support, which was meant to last for 5 minutes. I engaged him, and he had to spend another 3 minutes with me, so I dragged it out to 8 minutes. He was someone who was known from the time when he was competing for an editorship of the Harvard Law Review to take his supporters for granted and to woo his opponents, Mr. Soros added. Mr. Soros subsequently committed over $25 million during the 2016 U.S. general election to presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton and other Democratic candidates, according to federal records. So there you go.
So he wanted more personal attention? What, did he want a hug?
He wanted Obama to listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
And take his advice.
Obama didn't like working with anyone.
Well, remember, that was one of the criticisms of Obama that came from Democrats, is that there would be Democrat supporters. They'd be at a rally, and Democrat supporters, you know, the VIPs, would be there. Remember the one story of the VIPs mm-hmm. waiting to meet him? He walked right by them. It said, you're shunning the people that support you the most.
Yeah. And... because, and who was it, Chris Matthews at the end of 2011? He doesn't like the gig. He doesn't like meeting with people. The people of his own side forget about the Republicans. He doesn't like having, building those relationships.
Millennials want to retire by 61 years of age, but most have nothing saved. This from CNN.
Yeah.
A recent Bankrate.com survey asked millennials, classified as Americans aged 18 to 37, what the perfect time to retire would be. Their answer, 61 years old. I was talking to an old golfing buddy of mine yesterday, and he said, you know, we have retirement completely wrong. Because I was telling him, I said, you know, when I was, you know, 15 years ago, I thought to myself, wow, I'll retire. When I retire, man, I'm telling you, I'm going to play golf every day. I'm going to go skiing. I'm going to do a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
And I realized, well, by the time I get to that age, now I realize by the time I get to that age, I won't have the physical ability to do all those things that I wish to do. And he I hadn't talked to him in a couple of years, and he said to me, he said, you know something? He said, that's why I've always advocated that the retirement age should be between the ages of 40 and 60. He said,
right.
you should work
then
from
20. Then you go back to work at 60.
Right. He goes, you should work from 20 to 40, then retire 40 to 60, then go back to work at 60.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think a lot of people just don't do the math on what it will take. Like a millennial, what is it going to take for you to live? What will the cost of living be mm-hmm. for you? If you're living in the same town you're living in now.
They said the early retirement is something that seems very appealing. Bankrate.com analyst Amanda Dixon told CNBC, if only wishing made it so. Of those millennials already saving, the median retirement account balance is about $19,100. But overall, roughly two-thirds of millennials have nothing saved so far, according to a February report by the National Institute on Retirement Security. Unfortunately, even though 61 would be a great age to retire, it's not just not the reality for most people. In fact, NerdWallet calculates that a more realistic outcome for graduates of the class of 2018, what is the realistic outcome for graduates to retire? Anybody who is graduating the class of 2018 from college, what is a realistic retirement age?
94.
72.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only if they budget wisely.
Well, because, you know, again, cost of living is going to go up. You may think you're saving enough, even if you are saving. They're not, they have nothing in savings right now and believe they should be able to retire at 61. It's not going to happen that way. It's not. I mean, if you think about right now, you know, the boomers and a lot of the older generation that did have discipline in savings and still it wasn't enough because by the time they got to it, whatever it is, medical costs, cost of living, any and all the above, you essentially have to over plan. You really do. And you have to live far beneath your means all along the way.
Exactly what they say here. If you're looking to retire on the early side, experts recommend doubling down on your contribution level to your 401k or IRA and automating your deposits. The average millennial is contributing about 7.5% of their income. According to Fidelity, that's way below the suggested rate of 15%.
Right.
You have to make it something you're doing constantly, Dixon said, adding that retiring early these days does take some extra effort. And it can include doing things like you just said, tracking your spending, living in a cheaper home, and dining in even more, according to those who have achieved early retirement. So there you go. I just thought it was interesting that they wish to retire by age.
Well, and I don't
61.
Know how many of them are naturally frugal. I mean, I think some might be in that generation. But what do they define as frugal? Okay, you got a phone. Do you need HDTV? Do you need the service that goes along with it? And can they live beneath their means? I mean, forget about not being able to afford something. That's very different. If you say, okay, well, you know, I don't make enough money for this. Looking in the opposite direction of living beneath your means. Do they understand that? And do they care?
Well, is it, you and I have talked about, for example, where we talk about some of the apartment buildings being built around where we broadcast from right now.
Mm-hmm.
Much, much smaller apartments. Our old studio where we used to live across the street from these apartments that really were like 200 to 400 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole thing is, and we have talked about this before, many young people, that the size of where they live doesn't matter as long as they have a space. They don't want a car. They don't want a home. They want to pay minimal. But how long does that last?
Well, because the demand for apartment space has skyrocketed in major metro areas. And it did so after the recession. Fewer people wanted to buy homes, and they decided, you know, to start renting, or decided instead of making a decision to buy a home that they would rent instead, right? And that demand skyrocketed. When that demand skyrockets, well, the cost of rent goes, you know, the average rent goes up. And so now you're paying a lot more for that very tiny space. And they're still okay with that. You know, the way that I was brought up and the way that I really kind of saw it as a necessity, more so than just being frugal, it was, well, you find the nicest house you can in an older neighborhood. You know, you don't want to. You certainly don't want to live in a bad part of town, or you don't want to live in a bad home that's going to cost you a lot in repairs. But you find essentially the best you can without going way over the top in expenses. You look at the major metro areas right now, and rent is skyrocketing.
Well, rent skyrocketing, and then after the whole mortgage debacle. If you want to get a, I think what would be a reasonable mortgage, you've got to have something to put down.
Yes.
How many people in their 20s and 30s have something to put down?
Yes, and that was another part of it, is that fewer people are qualifying for the loans.
Right.
They don't have the same, programs, loans and loan products that they did back before the recession, which were ridiculous,
which destroyed the credit of some of those people that are above the millennials
and
that are now living in the smaller apartments because their credit was destroyed by housing.
And that was all part of that rising demand in apartment space, for apartment space. And that's where we are. And that's why rent is so high. And it will be. The multifamily units are going up, one after the other in our area. And we're not alone in that respect. It's happening all over major metro areas all over the U.S.
They're making many of the apartments smaller.
Much smaller. These corporations, the corporations that build these multifamily homes know exactly what they're doing. It's just like packing more people into a plane, what do you have
you
to do?
You mean multifamily apartments?
Mm-hmm. What'd I say?
Homes.
I said, well, that's what that is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Multifamily units are apartment complexes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. As opposed to a single family home, which would be a standalone home.
Right.
So when you're looking at the entire, all of that, it does make you wonder. What would you have to do if you're a millennial today? Well, you're going to have to make the most money you can make. You're going to have to be willing to, and you're going to have to live below your means. And are they willing to do that? It's a different, different
mindset.
The
other thing, too, we talked about, Ocasio-Cortez, and, when she was talking about economics, about how many people work, are working two jobs, and that's why the unemployment rate is low. And it's like, well, no, actually only 5% of the workforce is working, two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You think about it, my dad, into his 30s, worked two, sometimes three jobs. I worked two jobs well into my 30s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're told today that is something that, it shouldn't be expected. It didn't used to happen. Yeah, it did used to happen.
Oh, yeah. It's not anything new.
No.
But it's the mindset behind it. So do you take every opportunity where you see it, and do you live below your means?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. And yes, finally, the Democrats have come up with their midterm slogan.
Yeah? What's that going to be?
For the people.
Are they going to use the number four, like hip people do, instead of the word four?
No, I think it's going to be just F-O-R.
Oh. Yes. That's not cool.
Remember the last one from, I believe, the summer of last year was Better Deal. That was the Schumer economic plan that they rolled out with great hype and nobody was talking about the next week.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't an economic plan. It was a welfare plan.
Yeah.
And even other Democrats noted it and said, well, there's nothing about making the private economy go. Mm-hmm. This is all welfare stuff.
Yeah.
It's transferring money, but it's a welfare plan. It's not an economic plan. And so it died a quick death.
Mm-hmm.
So Better Deal didn't work.
No.
So now it's for the people.
Why not against the people? Just come on with it. Against the people. You know,
I'm sorry, but when I heard For the People, I was thinking it was some kind of new court show.
Yeah.
You know,
People's Court.
Yeah, People's Court. For the People.
They dropped the word republic. For the People's Republic.
they thought about for the American people, they said, no, because we're not really concerned with the American people. With sanctuary cities and with open borders, we have to say for the people.
Now, they were going to go with for the worker, but, already been tried.
Well, no, Cortez is not yet the head of the Democratic Party.
Right, because they got to wait for her to catch up.
Right.
Yeah, once she gets there, then...
It'll be for the worker.
So... Will she speak at the 2020 convention?
Oh, yeah. She'll have a primetime slot.
I'm guessing.
Guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
In the bank.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. The show's getting in the way of me paying attention to the British Open.
How's it going across the pond?
I don't know. Some guy I never heard of is leading, so. I'll watch when I get home. That's a cool thing. You get to watch it when you get home from work. It's like, oh.
Yeah, right.
Okay, let me see. I can see what's on Fox or CNN. Married with Children repeats for the last 20 years on, I think it's on TBS or the British Open. Boy. So. In the news today, I'm going to do the reverse order of news from the reverse order of importance. Former NBA star Dennis Rodman says he wants to introduce rapper Kanye West to Kim Jong-un during his next trip in September. Rodman claimed that he decided to offer the opportunity to the Grammy winner after West tweeted that Rodman was one of his biggest inspirations.
Oh.
You know, I don't do Instagram and stuff like that. My kids do it. I just know my agent called me and said, Dennis, Kanye West gave you a good shout out. I said, okay, great. Let's bring him to North Korea.
Okay.
Well, you know, we were talking about before with the Democrats' new slogan that's out.
Mm-hmm.
For the people. By the way, it's F-O-R-E.
Ah.
We're basically saying for. It's
telling like a warning.
Everybody to duck because socialism's coming your way. That's what it is.
Right.
But the new slogan for the people. And, you know, we've been talking about everything that's been going on the last week or so and the insanity. As I believe you said, I forgot, did I say it to you during the break or did you say it to me? we sometimes feel like we're the only people not on crack.
Yeah, I was telling you that sometimes I wake up and I just say to myself, are they literally smoking crack? And you said, well, is that the problem or is the fact that we're not smoking crack the problem? There's some kind of disconnect there. I don't know what it is, but it just is getting weirder and weirder.
Well, we had suggested earlier because of all the insanity that if the Republicans want to win, come out with the Trump song like Will I Am did.
Yeah.
Came out with the Obama song, the Obama chant. Back in early 2009, Obama, and all the celebrities were on it. And we were looking for celebrities. Well, as we said, Kanye West should do it.
Right.
And he should do the song, but you could get, Rodman would do it with him. Rodman was very complimentary of Trump.
Right.
Rodman might do it, Rodman in the background.
And if you have Kanye, you would have Kim. So.
Right.
And?
Rodman gives you a little bit of street cred, doesn't he?
Right. Kim's former stepfather? Caitlin? Right?
I don't know why, but I'm thinking in my mind, we are the world,
yeah,
and everybody's singing, and I'm picturing all of them doing it. So that's where the laughter's coming from.
And then at
from.
The very end.
Theater of the mind.
And then at the very end, Brennan just shouting expletives.
Treason! Treason! Treason!
Just pulling his hair out. If you wanted the left to really go bonkers, that would be it. Not that they haven't gone bonkers.
Very quickly here, since we're telling you what the news about of the day is all over the place, but it's all news that really hit yesterday big and will still be talked about today. We did talk about Brennan, the former CIA director, saying right. that what Trump did was treasonous. Now, right. anybody who isn't insane and understands the basics of law and constitution, Alan Dershowitz, for example, who came out, 2 days ago and said, well, no, of course it's not treason.
Right. The
president can have whatever opinion he wants. It's not treason. President can look at any international leader and say, oh, I trust you more than this. You may not like it. It may be the wrong thing to say. Mm-hmm. It may not even be true. But it's not, doesn't fit the definition of treason to begin with. So you may want to call him an idiot, a jerk, unpatriotic, whatever. But if you say treasonous, what actually is it? That's a death penalty crime that has a specific definition under the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So why would Brennan do it? And we started thinking, methinks you protest too much. Why? You're a former CIA director. And we started thinking, okay, let's start asking some questions. Since Brennan is making the allegations, then we can ask questions. And we talked about Samantha Power, the former UN ambassador, who was accused, remember, hundreds upon hundreds of times. They found out, the House Judiciary Committee and the House Intelligence Committee and members of Congress found out that she had unmasked people, which looked like they, from what we know, people inside of the Trump campaign were unmasked. This was intelligence and surveillance done on them. Hundreds of unmaskings. Hundreds. And the question was, why in the world would the head of the UN be doing this? And was she doing it for somebody else? Well, Trey Gowdy said when she testified before them, she said, I didn't do it. This wasn't me. That story has not yet been investigated, but as Eric and I said at the time, if she's claiming it wasn't her, then who would have the power? It'd have to be somebody very high up in the intelligence agencies to authorize something like that,
mm-hmm,
legally or illegally. And who would have knowledge of that? Who would have knowledge of the surveillance that was done after the FISA warrant on Carter Page? Who would be in the middle of all of it? The other thing that we brought up was the same thing we brought up with Peter Strzok last week, when Peter Strzok, in the text that he didn't recall sending, explained it in complete and full detail as to his motivation behind the
right.
text that he doesn't recall sending, mm-hmm, which was, as you saw it, what Trump had said about illegal immigrants that day, and you could see the fury in him. Liberals looked at that and said, oh, it shows him, but he just smoked Trey Gowdy at that question. See, he just smoked him. Trey Gowdy was sitting back. And for a moment you said, oh, did he smoke him? And you realize, wait a minute, no. Gowdy's a former prosecutor. He let Strzok bury himself. You want to see the anger of the bias? You saw it right there in Peter Strzok. Same thing here with Rand Paul, when Rand Paul was looking at the whole and analyzing the whole Brennan thing on Tucker Carlson, said the same thing. Look at that anger. Look at that kind of rage and anger they have at Trump. It shows the bias. If you're wondering, is there circumstantial evidence or suspicion of massive bias in deep state, the intelligence agencies, and in our law enforcement against Trump? Well, when you see the former CIA director completely off the wall with his allegations against Trump, you saw Strzok last week, you helped to point in that direction that, yeah, the bias of those in the Obama administration about the Trump possibly being president of the United States and then becoming president of the United States, it was unhinged. And then you ask yourself, with all the unmasking that we still don't know about, it had to be somebody high up in the intelligence agencies that approved it. And is that why he is protesting so much? Again, we're asking the questions, and we think the questions are fair, especially when the former CIA director is making completely insane and wrong allegations about the president.
Similar to McCabe and the extortion.
The extortion comment. Thing, yes. Mm-hmm.
Because they know the law. They know the process.
They know that Congress wasn't extorting by wanting to have more information.
And we've it's said with the whole unmasking thing and the FISA court warrants and all of that, when you look at that, especially from the perspective we have now, there has to be a number of people that knew about it at the very least, that were aware right. of such activity. We go back to the FISA courts and their concern with the Obama administration going back to 2011. And that's documented, by the way. This is all documented. And then days before the 2016 election, the Obama administration shows up to the FISA courts and says, yeah, we know you said that, but we didn't really do that.
That in the FBI and the Department of Justice, there was abuse to the point of American citizens' rights, Fourth Amendment rights, were violated. That came from the FISA court rebuking yes. the Obama administration. When you get the FISA warrant, it means the next thing you get is what? You get surveillance. As we were told by James Comey, these things are extremely rare. Extremely, extremely rare.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're extremely rare, how could Samantha Power be unmasking hundreds of possible conversations
as a UN ambassador?
As a UN ambassador, and she claims she didn't do it. Well, somebody in the intelligence agencies had to know about it, and with the FISA court rebuking the Obama administration, every FISA warrant that was done meant what? In all likelihood, CIA or NSA surveillance.
Yep.
NSA surveillance, which would then might have involved the CIA, especially if it was all overseas.
Right. And we've asked these questions all along. Because there's no telling where the fallout will be if indeed we learn that's what was going on, that this was an abuse of power.
And by the way, it could have been, let me throw Clapper into this whole thing too, former
sure.
head of the,
right.
you know, the NSA, who lied to Congress about the metadata collection of the NSA.
Well,
he lied.
For those who believe that Trump and somebody and or a group of people in his campaign are guilty of something, you still have the FBI not turning over the documents.
That is all along. If they were all correct and Trump was wrong, turn over the documents.
So I would ask this.
Prove that Trump is a traitor.
I would ask this of Brennan. Why aren't you shouting for that?
Yeah.
He's had plenty of comments on, as former CIA director, FBI activities. And we questioned that then.
If you believe Trump is a traitor, yes. and you believe that this is who he's about, and you are investigating
he's
him,
and
you know what's in there, and the claim is still there that he colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election, then Brennan and Clapper and everybody should be screaming for all the information to be released.
They should be the ones leading the charge. Who would have more intimate knowledge than they would?
If Trump is treasonous and a traitor, and you believe he is, then let's see the evidence to see if he is.
Brennan, Clapper, Comey.
Let's see it.
Why aren't you calling for this?
Why aren't you calling for the evidence to be released? If you've got the proof, starting him as a candidate
show the American
and the and the 2-year investigation going on, and knowing about the surveillance and knowing what was in the unmasking that had to do with the Trump campaign, and you believe it, you should be screaming that the information, the classified information, be released so America knows that this president is a traitor. Otherwise, shut up.
Well, because certainly they would know that there is something there, right? Have we
they
heard,
would, yes.
Have we heard Comey? Have we heard any of them even say that we're confident that this is going to result with someone in the Trump campaign being taken down? Where are they calling for the release of those documents to the oversight committees?
They're not. Why not?
Why not? They, of all people, know.
They know what happened during the campaign.
Yep.
And they were furious, and that's what set them off to try to discredit the election.
You want to take this guy out that you hate so much? You want to get him out of office? Why aren't you calling for that?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Well, before the current trade conflict boiled up, the Agriculture Department was already urgently ramping up efforts to boost farm and food product exports. And now, with tariffs and other trade disruptions a reality, it makes those efforts
more urgent.
USDA's Undersecretary for Trade, Ted McKinney, has just wrapped up a big U.S. trade mission to Indonesia, the seventh such mission this year. In the past, maybe there would be two or three of these a year, but with farm incomes nearly half what they were just 4 years ago, with low commodity prices, increasing production and trade disruptions.
Your game better include an aggressive export strategy.
Part of that is to have more trade missions, and McKinney told reporters,
"We know one of these trips might make the difference, whether a farmer or rancher is in the red or in the black."
So he says it is urgent to
keep markets open where we can. And where they are not open, maybe we can open them.
There are two more trade missions on the docket this year, one to South Africa, one to South Korea. Gary Crawford, U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio, I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. My favorite story, though, I had a previous favorite story, but this is not my favorite story. From the Sun, the tabloid.
Yeah.
But Drudge had it on, which means tens of millions of people have copied it, and so it's part of our pop culture now. Could Putin have bugged the football he gave to Trump? By the way, it's a soccer ball.
Yeah.
Could Putin have bugged the football he gave to Trump by stitching undetectable chip into the fabric? Security experts claims Kremlin spy wizards could have rigged the ball in which the Russian president handed to Trump. I have this feeling that any gift that comes from a foreign nation probably goes through a Secret Service analysis.
I'm just guessing. Like the president's going to be playing a bunch of soccer. Like he's going to take the soccer ball into the Oval Office with him, although he might. That'd be fun.
Here, I just love this. Russia could have bugged the World Cup football, which Vladimir Putin handed to Donald Trump. Uh-huh. Security experts have dramatically claimed. So they just didn't claim it. They did it in a very dramatic way.
Yes.
There was a lot of drama in the way that the security experts claimed it.
A theme song. Dun, dun, dun. You know, then you kind of ramp up the emotion.
Trump appeared to be in a playful mood during the press conference, but Russia could have bugged the World Cup football.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, I am getting so tired of this.
It just, it's entertaining, isn't it?
It is.
For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
Summer heat will be intense for the western and southern U.S. the rest of the week. Excessive heat warnings are in effect for parts of the west, while heat advisories blanket the south. Record high temperatures possible in the southern U.S. from today into this weekend, so the period of hazardous heat will be prolonged. In the west, it's the high temperatures and dry conditions, added to some winds which will increase red flag warnings and the potential for more wildfire danger. Atlanta will be at 90 today. Memphis will hit 92. Dallas above the triple digits at 106. Kansas City 92 today. Chicago 81. From Des Moines to Minneapolis, St. Paul, then over to Madison, we'll see some showers today. That's the I-35, 90, 94 area. That system will remain pretty well locked in place today, but look for those showers moving into the Chicagoland area by tomorrow. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Do-gooder tough guys, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Did you see that California gun store owner that caught Sacha Baron Cohen coming into his store? And this was February of, I'm trying to think, was this February of last year? February 17th. But he believes they were doing it in order to, you know, as part of the new show in America. But a California gun store owner got it all on film, him coming in, and he figured out it was him.
Right.
While he was in there, and he confronted him, he said, you know, you're Borat. And, you know, they've got the footage of it. Now they can't play it because there's a lot of profanity in it. But, you know, calls him out. And shows as he leaves, you know, he walks up before his camera people. He really didn't want to discuss it. And the gun store owner said, he comes in off the bat. I'm looking, I'm like, this guy doesn't look like a Hungarian immigrant. Because they came in with the camera stating that they were doing a documentary on a Hungarian immigrant wishing to buy a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, as soon as he heard his accent, he just went, nah, nah, nah. He goes, whoa, wait a minute. Look, he goes, the guy looks so weird. He goes, you're Borat. And as soon as he confronted him, he turned around and walked out of the store, leaving his camera people and his producers there. And so there was a lot of profanity, you know, thrown at them. But he turned around and walked right out. Like, oh, okay, I'm not going to be involved once I get caught.
Right.
I don't have the guts to stick around to say what I'm doing to the people that I'm doing it to.
Right. Well, I have to wonder with the, you know, the news surrounding, you know, what he does on this show, if that's going to basically diminish his ability to get away with it. He's going to have to come up with a lot more clever disguises. But really, he kind of has a unique look as a person. I don't know that after a while he's going to be able to get away with it. I guess in a small town where people don't care about, you know, the silly behavior.
That's Riverside, California, so it's the middle of the, you know, huge Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my point. Flex. He's recognized.
Yeah.
But in a small town, you know, he would have to go to a small town, you know, probably in the future to get something, any of his pranks done.
He's like, and, you know, he did it to make fun of gun owners and guns, you know, and gun stores and everything else.
He said,
we didn't fall for it. But he didn't want to stick around. He was out.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, I've been caught.
No, he can't face the music.
I'm done. I'm not going to face the music. I'm not going to, when the people who I'm trying to fool figure it out while it's happening, I won't sit around and defend myself for what I'm attempting to do. I'll turn around and run.
Well, because this isn't like the, you know, the candid camera thing, right? For those under the age of 80, Candid Camera was a TV program years ago hosted by one Alan Funt. And
it was pure greatness.
It was. And the thing is that because he was recognizable, because the show was so big, he couldn't actually do the stunts right on the show. Right. In fact, he would be the reveal that it was Candid Camera. He would walk into the room and people would go, oh, no, because they'd recognize Alan Funt. Well, Cohen does all of these, you know, disguises, these characters that are disguised, or he's disguised as these characters. He's the one that does all the punking. I don't see the value in it. Again, it's not the middle of the road nature of just trying to get a laugh, right? It's to mock.
To openly mock
a culture or a group of people. That's what it's designed to do.
Well, it isn't, because, for example, if you talk about, you use the example of Candid Camera, which is, I think, an okay analogy to use. Because those people, number one, were dying laughing when they found out what was going on.
Yeah.
They knew they weren't being made fun of. They knew it was just the joke in it, and they approved them using it.
I would have so much fun. If I recognized Cohen, I would set him up.
Yeah.
Instead of calling him out right there in the store, I would have made his production crew work all day, and at the very end called him Sasha.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Sasha. Did I play along well enough? Make the production cost so great. And then just embarrass him on his own camera.
I do what my 92-year-old father still does, because he might have a little bit more time in his hand than, you know, before he retired. But when a telemarketer calls, he says, well, let's get into the discussion on exactly the product that you have.
Oh, yeah, I did that one time.
Yeah, my dad makes the telemarketers hang up on him.
Oh, yeah.
And
my kids
and smiles.
Love it.
Isn't that great to do that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't get it anymore because I rarely even get them on my cell phone. But back in the day when we had a landline, we got them all the time, and we would just have a blast.
But if it's comedy, you don't run.
No,
you don't. You don't
no.
leave. You don't hurry.
If it was,
you can,
if
you,
it was done only to get a laugh,
let everybody.
You go, man, I'm sorry.
Everybody
you got me.
Everybody understands.
Right.
It's just to make a laugh.
Right. Even when MTV had Punked by Ashton Kutcher. Again, that was the whole idea. It was the same idea as Candid Camera, right? You get punked, they would punk a celebrity, but the idea was to have fun.
Right.
Well, that's not the idea here. The idea here is to mock people. That's what it's about.
Finally, the people of Texas may be suffering this week with a little bit of heat.
Just a little.
But the good news is Texas is about to pass Iraq and Iran, Texas alone, not the United States, Texas alone, as the world's number three oil producer. Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's unbelievable. If it were a country, Texas would be the world's number three oil producer, behind only Russia and Saudi Arabia. That's from HSBC Bank. Plunging drilling costs have sparked an explosion of production of the Permian Basin of West Texas. In fact, Texas is pumping so much oil that it will surpass OPEC members Iran and Iraq next year, HSBC predicted in a report. It's remarkable. The Permian is nothing less than a blessing for the global economy, said Bob McNally, president of Rapidan Energy Group, a consulting firm. The hypergrowth out of Texas is needed because oil prices have risen sharply and major players like Saudi Arabia are quickly maxing out their oil production. Much of the excitement in Texas centers around the Permian Basin. Some oil executives believe the amount of oil in the Permian Basin rivals Saudi Arabia's Saudi Arabia's biggest oil field.
Yeah.
Rapid technological advances have dramatically brought down the cost of pumping oil everywhere, especially out of the Permian. Wells can be profitable below the $40 per barrel amount. The industry cracked the code on fracking.
Yep.
That's unbelievable.
Well,
you and I talked to start off this week because it was our 13th anniversary together, mm-hmm. and we went back to 2005 and some of the things early on when you and I started working together. Red Eye with us didn't start till 2012, but right. you and I were working together since 2005, and we were just talking about the number of things that we dealt with and how in 2005 and 2006 and 2007 and 2008, we were being called idiots because we said there is no peak oil.
No such thing.
All the peak oil. And I never forget one time saying to you, when is this going to stop? When are people finally going to understand that they sound like idiots? They're calling it, you guys don't know what's really going on. I always love that one as a talk show host. You guys really don't know what's going on. No, actually, you don't. I just wonder what the peak oil people, because I'm telling you, they were huge conspiracy theorists. I mean, they were absolutely adamant about peak oil. I wonder what happened. I mean, when they stopped calling our show, what did they do then at that point? What did the peak oil people decide to do? I don't know. I mean, I'm just asking.
I think they went on to peak air. We're all breathing it. It's going to run out. Okay. All right there, genius.
Hey, I said, and finally there. No, it's not finally. And finally, the Supreme Court of California said no to splitting up California into three pieces right now. The ballot initiative is a no-go as of right now.
Yeah, it was essentially that this is not the process. If you want to do that, this is not the process. You don't do it through a ballot initiative. Because if you look at the nature of a ballot initiative, there would be a number of things, basically all questions answered before it gets to that point. So your voter basically is going to have all the information, you know, available to them that they need to make a decision.
Right.
And it's usually a very simple equation.
And the other point that they're looking into is the actual state constitution and the law, the ballot initiative law that was passed in 1911. The state Supreme Court is telling those proponents, look, we're gonna look at this, but we believe that the law that had to be passed by the legislature to create the initiative ballot is only for things internal to California.
Yeah.
That the initiative process does not have the authority from the legislature, does not have the authority to split the state into
right.
three.
Right.
Now, if the legislature wished to do that, they could do that.
Yes, this isn't the process for that.
Right.
And because if you look again at the very, it's a much simpler, equation. That's what the ballot initiative really is all about. You're going to have to be able to, and it, not that every issue is simple, but what you're saying is that the voter is going to have any information they need about that available to them. Imagine all the elements we said earlier, it'd be tens of millions of pages trying to explain what would happen in the event of a California splitting into three states.
And the justices said that, you know, the ballot initiative can do stuff within California. It can revise the Constitution, but it can't eliminate the California Constitution.
Which it would be,
you'd be eliminating the Constitution by default by having three separate states,
mm-hmm.
and only the legislative process can actually destroy the Constitution.
Right.
And that's a great point. I didn't even think about that. When I read that, I went, oh, that's really, really a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean that it's ever going to happen, even if the state legislature did it, which is they're not going to do.
They're not going to.
But
because the politicians aren't, you know, the right. grassroots thing is one thing. You know, getting it to a ballot initiative is one thing on any issue. But having someone take on something like this that is holding elected office, they're not going to lead the charge here. That's not going to happen.
Right. So it's not going to happen. And even if it did happen, it doesn't mean anything because the federal government would never allow it.
Right.
And then we'd have a civil war. us against California.
Which California?
Well, that, well,
one, two, or three.
Well, that's true. Well, they'd have a war with themselves then.
Now, would we call them C1, C2, C3? How does it work?
Wow, there'd be a civil war inside of California.
Right.
Ooh. We want out!
Could we like belly up to the border there between Nevada and California and just watch? Hey, we're just watching.
All right. Enough fun here. 866-90-RED-EYE.
How much do you know about synthetic oil? Heavy-duty trucks have been running on traditional mineral oil for the last 100 years. But today's technology brings us other options to consider. It's better quality. Unlike mineral oils, synthetic oils have a consistent molecular structure, giving it the ability to support pressures from higher horsepower engines, especially at lower RPMs. It also allows oil to reduce friction in an engine, controlling temperatures and improving fuel economy. They're cleaner. Synthetics pick up fewer contaminants as they do their job of lubrication. They also have better oxidation stability, resulting in an overall cleaner engine. Synthetic and semi-synthetic oil may be a bigger investment up front, but the benefits of its high-quality composition will pay off in the long run.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll-free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Okay, after getting hit by that soccer fan this week for some of my comments on the World Cup, let it be known, because we were talking about the ratings for the World Cup that were actually down, the ratings for the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, record lows.
Wow.
Yes. So.
Imagine that. I didn't think they could get any lower.
Oh, and now I forgot. It's one of the Tennessee Titans players first to announce, I will take the fine. I will kneel for the national anthem.
Okay. Then.
Announcing early out. So here we go.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.